Well, good evening. Thanks for coming. In The Fundamentals of Therapy, it's one of the basic books that Rudolf Steiner left to the world about the therapeutic work. In the beginning, he posits a question. And I thought I would start with that because it's probably the central question of the work I'd like to do with you. If you get an infection, your system is designed to create an inflammation, to send organisms in your blood towards the invading pathogen, to identify with it, copy it, spread the copies around, say, this is the bad guy, take care of things, mop up, and then start a healing process. So in the beginning, the inflammation, as the old people would say, calor, rubor, tumor, dolor. Calor, heat, rubor, red, tumor, hardening, and dolor, pain. So if you were a doctor in the past and you were studying, you would say calor, rubor, tumor, dolor, and you would know you'd be dealing with an inflammation. So in that process, calor, rubor, tumor, an inflammation leads to a tumor forming, a hardening. When the hardening happens and the pain comes, that's actually a sign that the whole inflammatory process is unfolding in a healing direction. So inflammation, even though it could kill you, is a healing process. It's a natural healing process. And sclerosis, the opposite pole to inflammation, sclerosis, technically, sclerosis means depositing something or hardening something. So the tumor in calor, rubor, tumor, dolor, tumor is sclerosis, a depositing. And in healing processes or in the growth of the body in general, the forming of a bone, the forming of a tissue out of a fluid, is a sclerotic process. We could call the forming of tissue out of fluid growth, but it's sclerotic, technically. So sclerosis, which is considered to be a disease process, is actually a natural process in the body. So inflammation, an infection that could kill you, and sclerosis are both actually natural healing forces in the body. So Rudolf Steiner mentions that and says, so where does the illness come in? A really, really good question. And the answer he gives is the illness is not in the body and the life forces. The illness is in the thoughts we bring to the body and the life forces. The illness is in the soul. And that picture is the picture that I'm going to try to unfold for you and with you for the week. It's the, we could say, the body-mind connection, the soul and the interaction of the soul forces, the forces of consciousness, interacting with the forces of life, creates a condition of tension because in Steiner's point of view, the forces of consciousness, the force of the ego, is the source of disease. This is a very sobering thought. But it's at the heart of the revolution that Rudolf Steiner is bringing to the medical work, is that the pole of consciousness is the disease-producing vector. It is the disease vector. It's not a germ. The soul process creates a potential for the germ to find a milieu in which it can multiply. So when the germ theory and, you know, now cloning and DNA, whatever, all of the evolution of thinking in terms of physiology, modern physiology, contemporary physiology, doesn't touch the pole of consciousness except in an incidental way. It's kind of sort of there, but, you know, if you want to do that, you have to go see a shrink. But for Steiner, the realm, the pole of consciousness was the disease-producing vector, the factor. And that's really different. So my work, I think I started studying physiology when I first started writing Seeking Spirit Vision. And that was published in 1998, and I worked on it for 15 years. And now, since 1998, I've been just continuing trying to study physiology. And I never felt I could do a course like this because I didn't think that I understood physiology well enough. But I, in the process of working with these ideas and doing biodynamic work and cow guts and manure and gems and weather and all this other stuff that I work with and color, I began to see there were certain patterns behind them all from Steiner's point of view that allowed a person to enter into physiology from a kind of mythic consciousness having to do with the soul that provided a way of understanding deep conundrums about things like diabetes and cancer. And why and how does diabetes work through families, through inheritance? And what is inheritance? What does that mean? How does that work? Is it just genetic? Or what is a gene? So these questions I've had, I didn't feel like I could answer them too well until I got two keys. And the first key I'll share with you, and that is from Occult Science and Outline, Old Saturn. And that is called The Fall of the Spirits of Darkness. And the second key is Rudolf Steiner's idea of what he calls the ego organization in all the medical literature. He talks about the ego organization. I've asked doctors, I've asked therapists, I've asked all kinds of people, what's the ego organization? I go to the PAM conference, and what's the ego organization? It's kind of like, you know, it's like you get a cramp and you do this thing here and, you know. No, I don't know. What's the ego organization? Well, it's kind of, you know, and I never got an answer for what the ego organization was. Now, it turns out that the ego organization, in my understanding now, has to do with the fall of spirits of darkness. So those two things went together in my head a while back. And the light went on, and I said, I can do this. So that's this course. When I got those two pictures, it allowed me to understand this issue of consciousness as the disease vector. What is it? Why is it? What does it mean? And then the flip side of that is, because it is consciousness, it can't be measured. And Rudolf Steiner himself says in the curative course, don't try to measure the ego organization based on the results of some test that you do, because you're not going to be able to do it. And the reason is because the relationship between the ego organization and the physical body, which is its fundamental relationship, is magical. Quote. So don't try to measure it, because you won't be able to. But you can observe it. You can pay attention to it and see the way it works, and by their fruits you shall know them. But you will not be able to measure it, because it's a magical relationship, and the very essence of the magical relationship has to do with the fall of the spirits of darkness, so we keep going around. Yeah. So there's a key in there that I'm going to present tonight to you, and I'll keep returning to it over the days as we go through, because it, hopefully by the end, when I say ego organization and stuff like that, we'll have a common language. And if we have a common language like that, I can tell you, your reading of physiology and eurythmy and all the kind of stuff that you need to read, whatever you're doing, biodynamics, will be a lot better. If you understand how consciousness and the life forces, especially the elemental body, the elements in the physical body, how consciousness interacts there, and why the astral body and the life body are linked to each other, then biodynamics or color work or whatever become clearer. Okay, so that's what I hope to share with you in the days that we're together. And I'm excited about it. I kept telling people, I think this is going to be cool, because I'm jazzed about it. And my poor wife will tell you, I have my nose in books, and it's just piles of books at home. But I told her tonight, I said, ooh, now I can put the books back on my bookshelf after I get done. After I get done with the course, because I'll have felt like I had done something that I've been trying to do for 25 years. So, the fall of the spirits of darkness. In Old Saturn, there's a motif that Rudolf Steiner gives, starting with the thrones on Old Saturn. And his language comes from John Scotus Eriginius, whose language comes from Dionysos the Areopagite in the 4th century. He didn't invent it, but what he did was make it available to a modern consciousness who wanted to understand how these old hierarchies relate to modern concepts in science. That's what I have found. So he took language from the 4th century hierarchies and put them in a context where you understand the dynamics. So what I've done up here, I've made an outline of the hierarchies on the left, thrones, curiosities, dynamies, exousiae in the old language.
Figure 1.
Sheet number 1. Then the quality that they bring, according to Rudolf Steiner, and then as he explains it in Occult Science and Outline, the experience that those beings had on old Saturn that set the seed for a human being to have a physical body. So the hierarchy of the thrones is the hierarchy of will. And the way he describes it is will, we could say will is enthusiasm to be. It is warmth for being. And he calls it the sense germ. It's a germ of what later will be a sense organ in the physical body. And the reason why it's a germ of a sense organ is because through our sense organs, we receive all kinds of things in the world that let us say, I'm having a good time. I am being. I have a quart of Ben and Jerry's right now, so I'm a happy camper. Or whatever. I'm listening to, you know, Def Leppard or something. I'm fine. Sense experience brings enthusiasm for being. And if we want to understand the spirits of will, the thrones, they brought a great enthusiasm for being. But there was no real being yet other than their being of enthusiasm for being. And there was a huge flux of warmth and will towards being. And that went out from them. And then out of the being of that being arose other beings who saw the enthusiasm and will and said, this is wise. This will means something. So the way Rudolf Steiner describes, those are the curiosities. They are the spirits of idea, spirits of wisdom, the idea. And he said what they did was they gave a plan to the enthusiasm of the will. They said, it could go like this. And they reflected that back to the thrones in a reflection. And that motif of reflection is really a key, because that's the basis of the nervous system. Basically, it's just a mirror. So in physiology, reflection and mirroring is all your fail-safe things, all your endocrine pathways and buffers and antagonistic pairs of muscles and, you know, stimulus response patterns, glandular secretions and response secretions, you know, thalamic connections in the brain. All this stuff is mirroring. So right there in old Saturn, the mirroring process that the curiosities have to the enthusiastic will of the creative beings to create a sense organ creates a plan, creates a patterning, a beginning of a patterning. He calls it wisdom. And then other beings arose out of that, the dynamis. The Dynamics, so it's like a rock group from the 50s, you know, the Dynamics. The Dynamics showed up and said, you know, between this great will thing here and your reflection, there's like this space in between where something is happening. Let's call it movement. So the impulse is going out from the thrones and reflected back to them by the curiosities. And we have a plan. And not only do we have a plan, but now we have a reciprocation like every other reciprocation in the whole physical body, every polarity. Everything is reciprocal, which is why studying physiology makes you nuts. Because as soon as you think you understand something, the opposite is true, and it's like, okay, maybe I have to study this more. But that's because of the wisdom of the great plan is reciprocate, and that creates the pattern of movement. And Rudolf Steiner links that work of the dynamis to what he calls the forces of life. Life forces move according to a plan, a wise plan. And when those wise moving forces go out and in and in and out and out and in and out and in, we have the basis of what later will become organism. Stuff goes out and stuff comes in. Mouth, anus, whatever you want to call it, that's the plan. In, out. Here, there. Center, periphery, periphery, center. Blood to the capillaries, blood to the heart. Blood to the capillaries, blood to the heart. So the great plan is to reciprocate in motion, and when that happens, systems become possible. And then there's another hierarchy that says, oh, systems, yeah, I get it. It kind of works like this. And they give the systems of the life forces form. We get the exousiae. So now they're not just forces that are reciprocating. There are patterns. There are the possibility of forms arising. Things have insides and outsides. And then the stuff that's inside tries to get to the outside. And the stuff that's on the outside tries to get to the inside. We get sense experience and inward responses and glandular responses to sense experience. Yeah, because this hierarchy that creates form, Steiner says, creates the potential for what he calls psychic imagery. So we're no longer dealing with an original force. We're dealing with a mirroring of a mirroring of a mirroring. And you know what happens in mirrors. Pictures arise that are not the thing. Well, that picturing consciousness arising that is not the original thing is the source of eventually what will become the inner soul response of consciousness that a human being will have when they have a sense experience. What I've already characterized as consciousness equals illness. So now this being that's being created not only is participating in this kind of reciprocation, they have the ability to, within themselves, to have the experience of an image arising in them. That's the exousiae. The image is a form of an original force, an original experience. And the next hierarchy, then, is where, in esoteric language, it's called the spirits of darkness, the archai, the spirits of personality. And in that hierarchy, not everybody, but there were a few on old Saturn who received these reciprocating images. Rudolf Steiner at many, many places calls the images that are coming from the cosmos imaginations. That's his kind of code word for the ether sphere, for the forces coming from the ether sphere. He calls them imaginations. The archai are the first hierarchy to take the imaginations, and now because the exousiae have created the potential for a psychic experience with imagery, the archai take that one better and say, now that I have the inner experience of an image, I can see that there's something out there that is not me. It's no longer I'm reflecting the cosmos in my inner life. I have a little portion of me that I hold, that I take away from the cornucopia of forces. And I hold on to that. And that holding on to that image causes the fall, creates the potential for a being who has senses to experience that they are separate from the source of the imaginations. In other words, they have their own consciousness. And because they have their own consciousness, that is the door to illness. That is it. And when I found this, it was like rockets going off. It's like, oh, that's it. So what the archai do, some of them, not all of them, but some of them, have the experience that these imaginations coming from these exalted beings, they pull away from the wholeness, the, what's known as the pleroma, a little something. And tomorrow night we'll do, I'll present a musical interlude for you, an analysis of Johann Sebastian Bach's Art of the Fugue. I have recordings and we'll go through it. And in the second fugue, there's this gesture in there of this kind of pulling away musically. And you hear a kind of in the music. And then he continues that as we could say the gesture of otherness. The gesture of the number two. The one who is not the original one, but holds a little something off. We could say embryo. The embryo that is actually kind of parasitical. Or as Rudolf Steiner puts it, tumor-like. Yeah, the overcoming of that tumor-like force by bringing tremendous life, that's we call that gestation. Yeah, the great drama. So the fall in the archai is because they hold on to a portion of the imagination that allows them to see that the source of the imagination is separate from them. And that represents a kind of wrinkle, because the part that's separate from the creation is no longer under the recognizance of the original creator. It's slipped into a kind of funny little world. And the name of that world in anthroposophy is called the soul. The astral body. So now the seed of the astral body is set by the fall of the spirits of darkness, because they bring the potential for personality to develop. And there's like a big uh-oh in heaven. And so the next evolution is after the spirits of personality experience the image imaginations outside themselves, the archangels have to deal with this. It's like, ooh, what do we do with this now? So they begin to try to process, but you know, we're on sort of a slippery slope, as hopefully you can see already. We're kind of sliding down towards something. So what happens, according to Rudolf Steiner's picture in Occult Science and Outline, is the effort of the archangels to deal with this inspires the seraphim, the beings of love, the highest under the Trinity, to come down and to join their forces. Because he says the seraphim and cherubim actually have nothing to do with human incarnation. By old Saturn, they've already blown past it. There's no shoulda, coulda, woulda to the seraphim and cherubim. They're freebies. They're beyond it. However, they are inspired by the action of the archangels to deal with this and give love, which is their hierarchical force that they bring, give love to the archangels. And out of the love that the archangels have, that they receive from the seraphim, they take this feeling of imagery, of separating, and they have, as Rudolf Steiner puts it, the inner experience, I exist because the image of the cosmos is coming to me. They love the image. And they turn it around. Their experience is, God is in me. But it's different from just having it come in and go out like the other hierarchies. They actually can be aware of it. their sense of how the imaginations come in, creates a consciousness in them that God is in them. And then that, down the slippery slope, falls one more. It goes down to the angels. And the angels have to take this God is in me experience, and their experience, they have to develop it somehow. Their experience of struggling with this inspires the cherubim, the spirits of harmony, to come and support their work and give to them harmony. So the angels feel the harmony of the inner picture. The way Ra'al Stern puts it is they interact with the inner pictures. And they say, not only is God in me, I am in God. I reciprocate. And then there's us. Amazing picture. It comes from Ralph Steiner's work. So this falling and redeeming is around the issue of sense experience and the forming of an inner picture. It's the key. So when I have a sense experience and I form an inner picture, what has happened over time in the human hierarchy now, us, is that because of the falling, we're just on old Saturn still. This is just spiritual stuff. I have to go through old Sun and then old Moon where there's rebellions and finally Earth evolution. And all the way down, as the processes happen, the human being becomes more and more embedded in the physicality of the sense experience. The physical nature of the sense world. Instead of the sense world being populated by gods and goddesses or kachinas or devas or whatever you want to call them, it's just stuff to a modern consciousness. And if you believe, it's little elementals running around and angels like, oh my God, you need to talk to somebody, guy. Okay, because our consciousness has fallen so far because of the way our sense life and our thinking operates, that's difficult for us to understand that hidden in the sense world is the action of all the hierarchies. And we could even say the Christ being is in the world, is in the earth. So our evolution now is to overcome the fallenness of the sense life to create in ourselves imaginations that we can give all that has fallen back up to the angels and to the archangels and to the archai and all the way back up the chain. That's what Rudolf Steiner said is a purpose of human evolution, is to give the creation back to the gods. Consciously. But the problem is, consciousness brings illness. Dang. Yeah? So hopefully you can sense the poignancy of this. So as humans, we tried to do this, we tried to bring consciousness to turn this around. It's pain and death and anxiety and all this stuff arises, and confusion and doubt and fear and hatred, all the stuff we say shouldn't be part of the world but is, and we're wondering like, who made this? And the answer is, we did. Adam and Eve, that's our us. And we did it as a kind of schooling, so that as the 10th hierarchy, we could turn it around, and then Christ as the teacher of how to turn the earth around back into a spirit. That's the great Rosicrucian teaching, that the Christ is now the spirit of the earth, which means my sense activity has something to do with the work I need to do. Okay? So that was the thing that kind of did it for me, was realizing that in the fallen archai, the retarded archai, there was a seed set in evolution so that the senses would be the fly in the ointment. And that we had to develop thinking to such a degree, consciousness to such a degree, and experience the pain of that, and the anxiety of that, so that we would be soft enough to turn around. This is, you know, the Gulf oil spill and a new policy towards energy in the United States. This is just called Learning 101 for Humans. It's just the way we do it, as the 10th hierarchy. Oh, you mean I don't have any other way to do it? No, I don't want to do it. Oh, okay, I guess I'll do it. Oh, good. We're all happy. Yeah. So there are a couple motifs I want to share with you. If you look on your handout, what I've done is tried to bring together a couple polarities for you that really will help you understand physiology from the point of view of Rudolf Steiner, using this idea. So what happened there on old Saturn with the fall of the spirits of darkness was that there was a separation of imaginations as potentials to imaginations as stuff. That's what happened. That's the fall of the spirits of darkness. Imaginations as potentials and forces and will and enthusiasm suddenly becomes, what is that out there? That falling is the key to understanding physiology. It's the key to understanding how consciousness arises out of glandular secretions. Secretions, excretions, incarnations, manifestations. So the great polarity, and we'll keep returning to this, they're the first key motif, potential and manifest. All physiological processes occur as tension between the potential and the manifest. Page 1, quotes. Potential means it's limitless, it can become anything. Manifest means it's this thing here. And whether it's blood or lymph or digestive fluids or collagen or glycogen or whatever it is, it is involved in those two polarities. They are what we could call absolutes. So they are similar in alchemy to gravity and levity. So levity is potential and gravity is manifestation, and they are absolutes. All physiology, those are absolute conditions. All physiology... Gravity is stuff falls down. Levity is somehow stuff gets up there again. The only force that's recognized by science is gravity. However, all you have to do is go on a website sometime and look at why are there two tidal bores every day. Just Google that sometimes, and you'll see some interesting things about masses of gravity pulls this, so the water on one side of the earth actually is sort of moving away from the earth, but it's because of the, you know, we got it figured out. But the water on the opposite side of the moon is kind of going away from the earth. But it's because, talk to the guy. Levity. So levity is the realm of potential. The life forces, activities, movements, creative movements, will, warmth, enthusiasm, interest, is a potential. I'm interested in that. Well, go do something, okay? I will. So there's levity in that. So warmth and light, those are levity forces. They have potential to become stuff. Science tells us everything in this room is made of light. But to be accurate, everything in this room is made of the corpse of light. That would be more accurate. But since we don't believe light is living, it's just light. It's just cycles per second. What do you not understand about that? Here's the meter. Oh, it's magical? Oh, okay. Right, got it. It's levity's a magical force? Okay, yeah. Where'd you do your graduate work? Oh, California? Oh, okay. Okay, so those are two absolutes. Levity, gravity, potential, manifestation. And we'll add some others as we go along. So you could say substance. Force and substance. So the force is potential, although it's actually a kind of manifest. It's actually there. It's become something. So it's sort of semi-potential forces. We'll get there. We have the language for that. Steiner has the language for that. So we have potential and manifest as absolutes. And then on your chart there, it says key motif number two, catabolism, inflammation, and anabolism. Page one, quotes. So catabolism is breaking stuff down into little pieces. In catabolism, the levity forces go away and substance falls out. Steiner calls it breaking down. And this is what happens in consciousness. In consciousness, the potential forces get lifted and stuff falls out. And Rudolf Steiner gives that as a picture of how the organs form. So there's a consciousness that is still up in the realm of the imaginations, but then substance falls into the pattern and becomes a spleen or something. And then once that organ is formed, the forces that fell out are attached to that substance and become the function of that organ. So we can take that bladder and fill it with a bunch of weird flowers and then spray it around on plants later and call it biodynamics. Yeah, so that's the keys to all of this, is understanding this. Then suddenly, why we use an organ and a particular flower starts to make a lot of sense. It's because the forces that form the organ are still there in potential through the activity of the organ, even when I take it from the organism for a certain amount of time. So I take that organ, and then the form of the organ can be hooked up to plants to do that, and then I get, yarrow prep or something, chamomile. Okay, that's so behind Steiner's thinking. And if you want the root of this, read Paracelsus. I mean, if you're into original sources, get Paracelsus, and as you're reading through Paracelsus, you go, that sounds familiar. Steiner himself says, Basil Valentine and Paracelsus, two go-to people for him. Helpers, we could say. So a lot that you find in the medical work you will find in the work of Paracelsus. A lot of ideas, a lot of pictures. So catabolism is when substance falls out, usually a fluid. So fluids carry life. And a fluid carrying life, Rudolf Steiner calls that etheric. Etheric. So the etheric body is fluids moving. And as the fluids move, substances go away from their substantiality into solution and flow energetically in the membranes of the fluid. That's the ether body. And those substances have to be rendered completely by the ego, because otherwise we get reactions in the body of the, you know, through protein specificity. We get a rejection of the substances that come in because our life body is geared to our life. So when that happens, when a fluid comes in contact with consciousness in an organ, an organ simply is a center of a kind of consciousness. Kill this, let this go by, cook this, receive this and let it go, get rid of this and let this stuff in. Those are the consciousnesses of the various organs. We call them temperaments. And we'll go there as we go along. The organ represents a kind of field of activity of consciousness. And when the fluid goes in that organ, stuff falls out, becomes cytoplasm, and consciousness rises up. That's a key picture in Rudolf Steiner's work. I'm a little slow. It took me 30 years to find it. But everything I read was saying that. You know how it is. But it's a key, big key. Because the astral body takes the life out of the fluid. And what falls out is substance. And the substance is in the form of the consciousness that's behind the organ. Liver, lung, kidney. How? Stay tuned. How? Wow. I could say, well, to how. It's the how is how my consciousness of my ego organization penetrates my physical or not. That's the theme for the whole week. So don't, if it goes by, we're going to go there again. Don't worry about it. Okay? Because we have to get to anabolism. So anabolism is when the levity forces unite with substance and dissolve it and move it back into potential, where it could become my protein. It can become me instead of, you know, tofu. It's not like your toes made out of tofu. That has to go away completely, or the body will reject anything that resembles tofu. And if you keep putting tofu in there, after a while it says, you know, I'm trying to reject some of this stuff. And then that's called allergy. Because you just keep putting it in. And I'm telling you, I want something else. But the body's patient. It just says, oh, okay, I'll send in Guido. That's called pain. the great leveler. Okay, so every reaction in the body has an element of catabolism, of breakdown, and anabolism buildup. Inflammation has a catabolic phase, you know, calor, rubor, breakdown, kill it, phagocytes, leukocytes, every other site, find it, kill it, eat it, break it apart, catabolism. And then, oh, okay, stop. Oh, you're eating the guy's liver. Stop. Stop eating his liver. Because then the doctor's going to tell him he's got autoimmune response. Is when your own immune system starts to eat you, because your consciousness hasn't gotten to the fact that you keep repeating something that it's not happy with. So after a while, the killer cells go, I'm just going to kill everything, okay? That's autoimmune. This is arthritis and all kinds of things. Okay, and it doesn't always have to be substances taken in. It could be consciousness that's repeated. Because we know consciousness is the source of illness, don't we? Interesting picture. Yeah? So, whether it's inflammation or sclerosis, it has combos of these two catabolic, anabolic forces. Anabolic is build up, dissolve and build up. Dissolving just means I put it back into potential so other things can be built on it. Yeah, because in the language, in the books, it's crazy. Oh, dissolving is build up. What do you not understand about English? But what it means is I have to dissolve it in the form it is so the ether body can build it back up again in a new form. That's anabolism. Okay, build up. Catabolism is when it gets broken down into little pieces and each little piece becomes a piece of something and no longer has the wholeness of the life bodies to support it. But in that process, what is liberated is levity force. And then we get to the great issue of the ego organization. Ego organization. So in the fall of the spirits of form, and here's my second key. In the fall of the spirits of darkness, the form became an inner picture for them so that they saw the world was separate. And that had to be redeemed in such a way that eventually the angels would interact with those pictures. Instead of just saying, it's out there, it's like, you know, something's happened in me when I have this, and then there's that thing out there, and this. There needed to be a flow and a reciprocation to it. And that experience that there's something out there that comes in here, there's something out there that has a life force of imagination and potential. The world is filled with forces. But I see stuff. A plant is growing. I don't see the growth. I see the corpse that has grown. That's my dilemma as a human. So if I wish to change that, I have to see the growing rather than what has grown. In order to do that, I have to do something with an inner picture, yeah? And I have to relate the inner picture to what's out there and what's out there to the inner picture. Now, the biggest picture that I know, the best picture that I know, the kind of most interesting picture that I know of these imaginations as a human is my body. My body is sort of the best picture ever of the whole cosmos. Why? Because it's mine. What do you not understand about my body? It's a picture of the whole thing. It's a picture. The forces animating it are still in potential. Because I'm speaking now, I'm pulling words out of somewhere. I don't know where they're coming, but they're coming out to you. Hopefully they're making sense. It's all in potential. And then it comes through the apparatus and it becomes quack, 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 quack. And then you go, oh yeah, quack, quack, quack. I get it. Okay, so that process is the ego having to deal with the physical body. Because the ego takes the forces of life and turns them into consciousness. The forces of life that you get from the cosmos, when you go to sleep and you wake up in the morning and your gas tank is full and they've cleaned the upholstery from last night's party and everything, and you wake up, those forces are given to you. And what do? You start thinking about stuff. You may even be obsessing about stuff. That's like, spend the forces. You got them, spend them. Hey, you're a sailor in Spain. Here's the forces, spend them. If you don't spend them, you know how it is with grants. If you don't spend it, there won't be any more tomorrow. So, and that's what we do with consciousness. The forces come in and we change them to thought. As Rudolf Steiner says, the magical thing that does that is the ego organization. Because the ego organization was the picture that these hierarchies were sending towards the form of psychic imagery through the exousiae to contact a personality. And it's my ego organization that goes, these forces allow me to think, to form pictures in myself and manipulate them around and do things with them, build empires and, you know, conquests and be nice and be ugly. It's because my ego organization takes the forces of life and casts them down into the physical and has to monitor how they're doing down there. So the focus of the ego organization, according to Rudolf Steiner, is a magical connection to the elemental world. Because we don't realize that when we cast stuff down into our physical body, we're releasing forces of consciousness that we don't include completely with our day waking consciousness, and the superfluous forces in that consciousness create a whole world of beings around us called personality beings. Elemental beings of personality traits. It's our entourage of little beings with horns and hoofs and goat tails, and they're playing little pipes and, you know, and guys that have the butt end of a horse and the head, you know, and those are just the nice ones. So some of them you don't even want to look at because they remind you too much of other things. And that's what we do in the ego organization when the creative forces of the imagination fall into liver and lung and kidney and heart and bone and teeth and soul. We, as the substance falls, forces are liberated of consciousness that we can either learn to work with. That's called meditation. That's day 5 when we get there. Meditation or Yahoo, party on. Come on down. You can use my consciousness. I'm not using it. Yeah? So the ego organization encounters the physical body.
Figure 3.
Page 1. And has to monitor how the fire, earth, air, water, the fluid nature and the substances falling in and out, has to monitor all that. How's it going? How's it going? How's it doing? And in the process, it forms thoughts about this stuff. That's called glands and stuff. And our glands are our chakras. That's also day 5. Okay, so the forces and in our chakras, there's a whole bunch of elemental beings. So when that happens, when the ego organization actually engages the physical body and starts to really, really go in there and go, this is what's happening down here in this part of the engine room. The experience we have is called pain. So when the ego organization penetrates into the physical directly and stays there, that's pain. But the purpose of the ego organization is to penetrate into the physical. Hello? So who designed this system? Okay. So the way Rudolf Steiner describes it is that the ego organization creates a will impulse that stimulates an idea that creates emotion, and the ego organization grabs the physical body and it starts to move and then releases. That's the way he describes it. It's constantly grabbing and releasing and grabbing and releasing. Nah. Okay, goes in and then releases and forms and releases and forms and releases. When it's healthy. When it's not healthy, it grabs and grabs and grabs and grabs and grabs, and that's pain. So the purpose of pain is to have the ego organization go, what's going on down there? Grab it, grab it, grab it, so that they can bring whatever's going down there into consciousness. And as they do that, then illness arises as a kind of, this is how this is going for you. Okay, so that's kind of the bookend, the big bookend. So the ego organization, the ego works with the physical body to grab it and release in health, because that's what it's, if I want to deposit some substance for a bone, I grab it, the consciousness arises, the bone material falls out, I get the collagen or whatever, and that's a deposition, that's a sclerosis. But if I just keep doing it, then the bone gets sclerotic. Or the ligament gets sclerotic. Yeah, because I just keep doing it. And then that we call that pain. As humans, we say, I get a pain in my bone. It just means I have a deep consciousness there. Okay, that's the one side. The other side is in between here, I have the astral body and the etheric body.
Figure 3. page 1.
The astral body is where I have my soul experience, where I kind of live in my soul. I'm not always aware of it, but I can be, I'm sensitive to things. I flow in and out in my sense life, in my astral body. And that interacts with my life forces, these fluid ways, to create catabolism. So that's where, over here, I have astral etheric catabolism. So my soul body interacts with my life body, and I get the beginning of deposition of forces. And if it's balanced, things get deposited and then released. Also, because the ego organization impacts the astral body, which impacts the life body, and they kind of dance back and forth. If they're all dancing back and forth, that's health. If my ego organization goes into the physical, or so if you're a doctor, you're an anthroposophical doctor, the issue is it because the ego organization is weak, or the astral body is too strong, or the ether body is too strong, it's impacting, or, you know, da 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 da. And to understand that, you don't go to your vade mecum. You start asking them questions about how they live their life. How do they feel about things? Yeah? Because that's where the illness is. Okay, so hopefully, I know this was a lot, but I wanted to give you a bigger picture, and we'll break it down now into little pieces as we go along. But I'll keep returning to these themes, because what I found is when it gets crazy, you stop and you go, okay, is this an anabolic thing or a catabolic thing? Is this going into potential or into substance? And if you use that as your leitmotif, here's the last one, ego, astral, life. So if the ego organization punches into the astral, punches into the life body, we call that anxiety. If it just punches and stays, if it goes in and pulls back, then we get a little anxiety, then I bring consciousness and I'm okay. In order to do that, I have to learn how to move. I have to learn to do art. I have to learn to have a garden. And then my ego organization and my astral body and my life body can all punch down into the physical and then breathe back out, and I go in and out and I'm a happy camper. Okay, then I have health. So health is the exact same thing as illness, except illness, I just keep repeating something that's healthy until it's not healthy anymore. This is why chocolate's good for you and horrible for you. Both of them are correct. You know, and we think there's going to be some answer somewhere. Oh, they're going to find out. They'll measure it. And they're not going to find out the answer because both are correct. So when we were in Delphi years ago, we were told over the shrine, there was, know thyself is what they usually say. Know thyself is over the shrine at Delphi. But we had a docent, and she said, actually, it's know thyself, nothing in excess. Know thyself, : nothing in excess. So it's the excessiveness of health. You can be too healthy. Then you're like, doomf, you know, duh. You're too healthy, you don't kind of get it. You don't get sick, so you can't have compassion on people that are sick. Just like, well, get well. What's the problem? Probably doing something stupid, huh? Yeah, so you can be too healthy, then your life body creates conditions where they have to give you a shot of lead to kind of knock you back a little bit so that you awaken. Yeah, so these are the themes, and hopefully I didn't fry you on the first night. But I'll keep repeating these again and again, and we're going to do a meditation. So tonight, I want you to kick this off. Tonight, what I'd like you to do is I would like you to imagine going inside the top of your thigh bone. There's an area where all the ligaments attach, the great trochanter. And then there's the head of the thigh that inserts up into your pelvis. And inside that bone is the major area where the bone marrow creates the blood. There are others in the pelvis and wherever. But in the adult, that's a biggie. And the esoteric schools, since the ancient times, had the adepts go into their thigh bone if they wished to understand life forces. That's right from Rudolf Steiner. So imagine that you go into your trochanter or your head of your femur here and enter into it and just listen in there and then do an ah inwardly. And the ah, this is the ah. 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 So going in to the trochanter is catabolic. The ah, anabolic. So the gesture of contraction and forming substance and falling out. Catabolism, stuff. I go in my bone, I'm in death. So the way Steiner puts it is, to look at the bone is death. To go in the bone is awakening. So the skeleton is an imagination of the ego organization. It's a picture. If you could see what the ego organization would do, the ego organization is kind of a musicality. So if we had, you know, a rib cage here, we go do 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 do. It's a musical intervals of the forming of substance out of levity force. That's the characteristic action of the ego organization. It gets embodied in that picture. So when we enter into the center of that, we go into probably one of the deepest mysteries of the regeneration of the blood. And what we'll do each session is I'll add to that. We'll go from the trochanter to the spleen to the capillaries, and we'll move through the course of the blood doing two eurythmy exercises that you'll do with Vince. So we're going to build imaginations coming out of your rhythmy and the vowels and the consonants and connect them to these great pulses in human physiology, catabolism and anabolism, the forces of manifestation and potential. Thank you for coming.